The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, here we are, back at it. Hard to believe 21 hours has elapsed, but it has. It goes by so quickly, it's ridiculous. We are on Friday, and very happy to have a little opportunity to spend time with Tom Luongo, one of the really great journalists working on this tired and beleaguered planet. Hello, Tom. Welcome back.
Good evening, Jeff. How are you?
I'm still here. Still here. Yeah. Doing my best, just like you. Here's a quickie for you.
Sure.
I just got a call from one of my colleagues. He lives in Las Vegas. They have three Costcos in Las Vegas, which is now a city of 3 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into Costco today, I guess to buy some more prep food or whatever. But he went over, and if you've been in these stores, ladies and gentlemen, you know they're huge, and they have these giant frozen meat areas. It's like 100 feet on one side of freezers and maybe 50 feet on the end. There's more freezers, and they have frozen meats of every kind you can imagine. Well, he went in, and he noticed that from the ceiling on down is this black plastic that they make big trash bags out of hanging down, covering up the meat freezers, all of them. And he looked, and someone had torn a hole in it, and he looked in the hole, and the freezers are all gone. They've been taken out. They're gone.
Wow.
And it's the same in all three Costco stores in Las Vegas, and in Kingman, Arizona, too, I hear. But so this means something. It doesn't mean they had a freezer malfunction. It means they're not planning on needing freezers for frozen meat.
Yeah.
They took them out.
Yeah.
So, cricket burgers for everybody. I don't know. But quite
you've
seriously.
You've bugs? Oh, my God.
You and you will love them.
Yes.
Love them.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
We don't have that problem here in Florida, Jeff. I can tell you that.
We still produce
more cattle than everybody else, and our meat freezers are still stocked at the gills.
Good. So. Well, the old axiom, remember, you put enough ketchup on anything, and it's tolerable, so they say.
Yeah, I remember reading Neil Peart, the drummer from Rush. He used to do biking tours and whatnot. And mm-hmm. in his first book, when he was biking across, it was a travel book about biking across Africa. And he said, well, you know, you bring a bottle of ketchup, and dinner was always rice with junk on it. And you never asked what it was, and if you're not sure about it, put ketchup on it. And I've heard that from multiple people.
Yeah, those are bushmeat entrees is what they are. Mm. And bushmeat is anything that walks and moves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
care.
Absolutely. It's wild. All right. Now, let's just jump over to what's left of Europe, Russia, Ukraine, and this has become a game of red lines and semantics, not to mention cocaine, child prostitution, and worse, and big business making lots of money trying to replenish the ever-dwindling stores of armaments that the West seems to be hemorrhaging into Ukraine, the bottomless pit of world Zionism, or whatever you want to call it. Have at it. What do you got?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Jeff. I haven't been following the day-to-day changes of what's going on in Ukraine at a military level, because at a certain point it became very obvious that the Russians are running this as a World War One war of attrition. It's an artillery war, and until the West escalates from a technological standpoint, meaning NATO has to move in for real, and how they would do this, I do not know.
I can tell you how.
What's that?
You heard the story about the leaked report out of Poland that they were actually going to appropriate Western Ukraine and make it part of Poland immediately, like in one of those overnight things, and automatically it would be part of NATO. That was the plan. Is it true? I don't know, but that was.
I mean,
story.
I don't know. What I'll tell you is that the Poles want Lvov back, or Lviv, or however you may. I tend to still go with Russian naming conventions for all of this Ukrainian stuff, just to be contrary about it, because they were always Russian pronunciations for all these cities forever and a day, and now all of a sudden
I'm with you. It's Kiev, Kharkov, it's Odessa.
It's Odessa, it's Crimea, it's Zaporizhia, and it's an AK-47, not a Kalashnikov. You know, because they've been doing this because Kalashnikov sounds horrible, right? So that's what they've been doing.
Best all-around rifle, I think.
I drive your car over the damn things.
They'll still run.
I've owned a cheap Romanian semi-automatic AK-47. It looks like, feels like a Tonka gun, like a Tonka toy. Puts bullets in.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Never have to worry about it. But I have been following it kind of at the strategic level, and I can tell you that.
I really like your World War One analogy. That's exactly how they're fighting this. And you're the first person that I've heard say that. And you're right.
Yeah, it's just an old fashioned trench warfare. I mean, the NATO prepped. The Russians are beating Ukraine with an American battle plan or a NATO battle plan with American technology and American weapons with, you know, an American strategy. And they prepped them for an air war with, you know, heavy-duty bunkers and everything else, and stingers and javelins, and they prepped them for an air-supported tank war. They didn't get that. They got an old-fashioned World War One trench warfare artillery war, the way the Russians always fight war. This is what the Russians are good at. And from a strategic perspective, that's exactly what's happened since the original shock and awe campaign, I guess that you want to put it, that the Russians, you know, the forefront war that they opened up back in February, then the Americans were like, oh, cool, this is the war we prepped them for. And, well, we didn't really prep them for four fronts, you know, from stretching from Kiev all the way down to Kherson in the south, you know, coming in from Crimea. But this was basically, you know, what we had prepped for was a kind of a maneuver war. And, you know, the Russians did that for a while. Their stretch goal was to take Kiev. They didn't take Kiev. They lost some armor. They lost some Spetsnaz. They got their nose bloodied in the parts of the country which were secondary targets.
Correct.
And then, you know, they regrouped and began the artillery inch by inch, block by block. You know, we can do this all day with cheap armaments and cheap ammunition. And that's what they've done. But from the moment the war started, I published a map of Ukraine saying, well, Transcarpathia would go back to Hungary, or, you know, and this is what the map of Ukraine is going to look like. And the only thing I didn't do was to say, and the Lvov would go back to the Poles, because the Poles have wanted Lvov since the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, you know, the Poles move into Lvov, and then all of a sudden we can have an Article 5 thing, because now they've you know, they've made Western Ukraine part of Poland, and that's what their justification is for Article 5. They want a justification for NATO to move into the war. NATO's already in the war.
Like, it's already from the beginning. Sure.
Right. It's been there from the beginning. So what they're trying to do is create the headline that, oh, look, the Russians attacked us so that we always, you know, so we can claim the moral high ground, which they've been doing since February 24th. This was always a war that we wanted in the West, and the Russians, we picked the place, and the Russians picked the time and the mechanism of war. And we're not happy about it. And the people who are doing, who are pushing this are specifically are the Brits and, you know, their allies within the U.S. government. And what we're seeing, interestingly enough, now that this is playing out, is that general Europe, or what I would call, you know, the Euro faction of the globalists, as opposed to the Anglo faction of the globalists, over all of which I would consider Davos, but now Davos is now split, where the Americans and Brits are effectively, in many ways, off that reservation. And there's a definite... animosity. There's a definite fight going on between those factions as to how we should go forward next. And you can see it if you look really carefully.
You know how the West has tried to save face with this. They claim that they wanted Russia in this kind of a configuration so they could grind Russia down and weaken it over time. That's what they said.
It's the typical neocon thing. This is British foreign policy going back to the 1860s. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. British 60 years policy. Before Verdun, and they're thinking that way.
Remember,
yeah.
They were always the Brits were in Afghanistan.
Yes, they were.
Back in the 18, like remember, Conan Doyle set up, you know, Watson to come home from Afghanistan with a war wound, right? The charge of the like all of this stuff, right? If I remember correctly, even the charge of the Light Brigade is part of the Crimean War, right? So, I mean, we're talking about the Brits have had a, you know, not generous, but the opposite of generous, like conservative, in saying that it's only been 150 years that the Brits have been trying to destroy the Russians. I think it's been much older than that.
That's so funny. I got to say this. Did you ever read, and I hope you did, any of the George MacDonald Fraser books about Flashman, the anti-hero? They're funny. Historical fiction, hilarious stuff. Flashman was at the lead of the charge of the Light Brigade, and he was in his horse, and he had a severe gastrointestinal gaseous problem, which spooked his horse and set off the charge of the Light Brigade, et cetera, et cetera. It's just... Fraser, George MacDonald Fraser, and just history through the eyes of a man with a genuine sense of humor and a great character, a protagonist, antagonist, just a doofus opportunist named Harry Flashman, who was one of Tom Brown's school chums, supposedly. Remember the Tom Brown school thing? Anyway, he was one of the characters in that.
Remember hearing about those books, but I've never actually
read them. They were fabulous. Anyhow, okay.
Okay. Gosh, well, sorry. I mean, no worries. It's all good. So, you know, I've the way I'm watching this now, it's very clear that there's a desire on the part of, you know, the Brits and the American neoconservatives, as epitomized by Mike Pompeo's recent completely insane Three Lighthouses speech that he gave at the Hudson Institute, that they want, you know, a 20-year war against the Russians.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not going to get it, because I don't think that that's what anybody else in the world actually wants, but that's what these people want, and they're not willing to go gently into that good night. But at the same time, I think Europe now realizes what they've done, and that their shock and awe financial and sanctions campaign against Russia has not worked. They're now trying to, you know, play the victim of American aggression and British aggression, which is what the feckless Europeans always do. When they're the ones that actually drove all of this, they turned the other way and said, no, really, don't attack Ukraine. Well, they're like, absolutely, you know, attack the Russians all day long, all day, every day. Yeah. So the way I've described it over the years is like, it's like, imagine Angela Merkel in a cheerleader's outfit going, you know, come on, boys, don't fight over me. you know, and like just to put that.
I'll pass on that vision.
Yeah, I was going to say most people need mind bleach after writing. But now that you've like thought about it from that perspective, like all of a sudden European foreign policy makes a lot more sense. the reality is that, you know, she was always just an old German Stasi freaking commie that was always working for the WEF to set Europe up for this. But what I find fascinating now is that, and from the beginning, I said, you know, while we say we want to grind Russia down in a war of attrition, from the moment the war started, I looked at it and said, but don't you think the Russians want to do the same thing from the West to the West? Like, and don't you think that they went into this knowing that that was going to be the strategy and that they have a counter to this? Do you think the Russians are that dumb? Do you think they just went off half-cocked? Like, to use a British expression, which is, you know, the phrase, yes. I don't know if you know that the phrase half-cocked comes from the Enfield rifle and the half-cocked position on an Enfield rifle. So,
I don't know what the American people think. Honestly, they've been in this hate Russia mind control programming terror chamber for the last, four or five years?
So they're almost six now, yeah.
Yeah, the average sheeple mind is thinking, hate Russia. So,
because they don't
know. And they put their Ukrainian flag up in their yard, and they're good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's already fatigue. That fatigue is already
it is fatigue. We got Ukraine fatigue. You got it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Russians understood this in the beginning, and they knew what to do. Like, I've watched this. How many times have I know you've been on the show before, and I think one of the first times I was on the show was when Saudi Arabia was trying to block Qatar. I don't know if you and I go back that far, but I remember
watching
that.
I think we do. No. I remember a Saudi component. That goes
right
back.
So it was very much that the Saudis were trying to, we go back to 20, I think it was 2017, but the Saudis did a shock and awe campaign to cut Qatar out of the global economy, to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. No different than what we did with sanctions against Russia after Crimea, in order to try and overthrow Putin that way. And I came to the conclusion after watching the Russians do that, and the early fear of it. I never really had watched anything like that before. But I said, you know, the way I look at something like this, it's very clear that if you don't get regime change in the first couple of weeks, that the whole color revolution or, you know, the style thing, a destabilization, if you don't get the regime change in the first couple of weeks, you're never going to get it. I've seen it with Iran. I've seen it with Russia. I've seen it I saw it with Qatar. And I said this during when the Qatar thing was
happening.
You're
right. You're correct.
I said if this thing goes 3 weeks and the Qatari government doesn't fall, then the Saudis are going to have to back off and they're going to have to sue for peace. And the Saudis, to their credit, did. We don't do that. We just keep doubling down and doubling down and doubling down and doubling down on the Russians, because this is a far bigger campaign. We'll never admit that we've been beaten on this front. So from the moment the war started, I said, okay, well, if you don't get Putin out of power, and I gave that like a 5% chance of happening, I said, and I argued with my partner about this, I've argued with many people about this who said, nah, this is possible. I'm like, okay, you're just analyzing this from the wrong perspective. You think that the oligarchs run Putin when Putin runs the oligarchs. Or the Russian state is far more powerful than the oligarchs are in Russia anymore. I said, this is not going to work. And if this whole shock and awe campaign does not crash and create a regime change in Russia within 3 weeks, then this is going to be a war of attrition of Russia against the West, because the Russians will then counter with financial weapons of their own, gas for rubles, pegging the ruble to gold.
No, we gave them all the weapons, didn't we? With all these asinine sanctions, everyone turned into a weapon they're using on us with no sweat.
Exactly, because sanctions invariably, Putin understands this, and he says this explicitly. He said, more often than not, economic sanctions hurt the sanctioner more than the sanctionee. Now, those aren't Putin's words, but that's effectively what he's saying.
Right.
And that's what any good Austrian economist or any free market economist will tell you. That's what any good, you know, frankly, any good libertarian who understands even the basics of free market economics understands that sanctions invariably hurt the sanctioner more than the sanctionee, unless the goal isn't unless. That is the baseline thing. But if the goal of the sanctions, in this case with the Russians, is to deny them higher-end technology, which is what most of the sanctions that we've put on Russia since Crimea have been about, so that they can't bring to bear hundreds of T-90 Armada tanks or the latest Sukhois or the latest, you know, EW or whatever it
How
is.
How about Mach 27 hypersonic cruise missiles? Mach 27.
I know.
Figure that out, dear friends. We did it the other night.
So I think that is really the goal, and then setting it. That's what they think is still going to work, and that's why they're still on the strategy of trying to bleed the Russians white. Because, well, okay, well, the Russians have survived this 6 months, but we've got a 6-year plan that we're going to, like, dude, the American government might not last 6 years. Like, the British government, it's not going to last another 6 weeks. The Italian government is gone. The German government isn't going to last out the year. Joe Biden has to be sundowned before the end of this year. Like, there's so many things happening here, and there's so many pressures that the counter pressure from the Russians have created so many fractures across the West that no one knows what to do at this point. The polls have committed themselves to the neoconservatives centered around the British. They're kind of pot committed because they're Polish and they can't help themselves. Even though in the polls' best interest, and I've been saying this for 2 years, that all they have to do is behind the scenes, back channel, call the Russians up, sit down, have an undersecretary of foreign policies, undersecretary, and the Russian undersecretary of European affairs sit down, have coffee, and work out a new gas supply treaty. That's all they have to do. And Poland's future would be secure, because then they would be able to economically stand up to the European Union and go, okay, so you're going to sanction us? Okay, you're going to take all our money away from us? That's nice. We leave the EU. You want to throw us out of the EU? We're okay with that. Go for it. And then when they do that, Hungary leaves, and then all the other former Warsaw Pact countries leave because they have access to the sea. Once they have access to the sea, none of those landlocked countries are at the mercy of the European Union anymore.
That's true.
Hungary talks about this all the time. So, but the Poles won't do this.
Yeah, I'll put something on the table. I honestly think that there is a globalist agenda to take down the West. And I think that those sanctions were an integral part of that plan. I think the globalist elite knew what would happen, and they have been primary instruments in destroying a great deal of our economy and a lot of other things as well. We won't get into now, but these sanctions, these backfiring sanctions, have turned into supreme weapons in the hands of a statesman like Putin, and they're being used against us. We're being deconstructed. I don't care what it is, the morality of our society, the economics, the politics, the entertainment, what entertainment? It's all, we're being deconstructed. And I was told 4 years ago that the plug was being pulled on the United States and Western Europe. I was told this by someone who had the ability to know. And it's happening. Now, the other issue is, oh, thank you. Oh, good. It's because I think it's right there.
No, but
the other
obvious
issue.
I mean, if you want global communism, Jeff, you have to get rid of the United States.
That's it. That's what we're facing. Global communism. Thank you. You just nailed it. It's exactly right. So all of you listening, that's what we've been talking about, and you heard it from Tom. He's on it. There have been so many red lines drawn now by Putin and Lavrov and the others. And by the way, they've lost a lot of generals down there. I don't know, maybe almost 20 have been killed, sniping and so forth. So that we've taken a bite out of their military command. There are always people to take their place. But if how many more red lines have to be crossed before Putin will be, I don't want to use the word forced because I don't think the man would be forced to do anything, but he could say that that's it. If Zelensky doesn't do anything, but if the controllers of this charade, this deadly charade, bloody charade, order the Ukes, I call them Ukes, to attack Crimea, with HIMARS or harpoons or whatever, or the bridge, which are, again, both red lines, big red lines, the final red lines, what happens?
It's a good question. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think the Russians start talking in terms of doing exactly what they've said. Like, we know where the decisions are being made.
That's NATO. We're talking Brussels. We're talking the UK. And maybe we're talking, thermal barracks. I don't know, but they're going to do something. You're right. I just This is seemingly to me the big red line. This is it. Crimea or the bridge.
Which is why the Russians are going to take Odessa.
They have to.
Now, of course they
do. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Because that ends the threat of that completely. And
no, that cuts Ukraine off.
As a twofer, also gives all of Eastern Europe access to the Black Sea, where they don't have to traverse EU land if they all leave the EU. Hungarians were in Moscow today.
That's a great angle.
Because they have access to the Danube tributary system, and by treaty, they have then, you know, there's no...
Got it. Goodbye, EU. I hadn't thought about that. That's great.
I have.
Yeah.
So, this is a very big deal. This is a point I've been making for a couple of weeks now. A few weeks after a patron of mine put it in my head. He's like, "Do you really want to think about this?" I'm like, "Oh, that's exactly why they need to take Odessa." Aside from the fact, of course, that it's the main way for them to protect Crimea from, you know, in every other way. Sevastopol has to be protected from missile attack. It's why I was listening to Colonel McGregor the other day, who's on
McGregor.
With Judge Knapp. And he was on with Judge Knapp, and he said, FYI, right now the bulk of the fighting on the ground is being done by the LPR and DPR forces of Donetsk and Lugansk and the Chechens, while the Russian army, the Russian military men who fought the first wave of this war have been resting, recuperating, and getting resupplied. So the Russian military at this point is, from what I understand, if McGregor is correct, then they're getting prepped for a major offensive this fall. And you can see from the day-to-day, I mean, I say I don't look at the day-to-day stuff. I do a little bit here and there. You can see some of the major bombing incidents, what the Russians are doing now. They are sincerely softening up Sumy, Kharkov, Kherson in the south, Mykolaiv, and now Odessa. They're setting up that there will not be any resupply. There will not be they're going to overrun the Ukrainian army. And everybody knows that the bulk of the best of Ukraine's forces have already been destroyed in the Donbass, because that's where they were.
No, they were liquidated there. You're right.
Yeah, they were liquidated. Yeah. And liquidated is the best term I can come up with for what everybody is trying to do. Davos is trying to liquidate the middle class here in the West, in Western Europe and the United States.
Yes. Yep.
We just scored a major victory. Humanity just scored a major victory yesterday, or it was Wednesday, when Mario Draghi stepped down as Prime Minister of Italy. It's one of the most
bad guy.
It's one of the most important events of 2022. Maybe more important than anything other than Russia invading Ukraine.
Really? You call that, when I talked to you last, a week or 10 days ago, you said he's gone. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't quit yet.
No, he hadn't quit yet. Mattarella was going to, the president, Sergio Mattarella, was going to try and make this work as much as possible. Draghi went back into parliament hoping, expecting to be able to split Five Star down the middle between the basically the neocon faction led by Luigi Di Maio and Giuseppe Conte, and he didn't get it. What happened was, and this may take a couple of seconds to set up. And I don't know how much time we have before the break.
No break. We're going through it. It's already passed.
Okay, straight through tonight. Okay, great. Yeah. So here's the thing. I wrote about this last week. So for anybody who's wants a little bit more of a primer on this, they can go ahead and read the article I wrote about Draghi when he resigned the first time, a week ago. But here's the kick. Conte was the bag man for Merkel when he was put in charge as prime minister of the weak coalition between the Lega and Five Star four or five years ago now. But he was always the guy to keep the bag man for Merkel, to keep Italy in the EU and keep them in the euro, right? So what's changed that Giuseppe Conte would come out and say, I can no longer support a government that does not care about the Italian people and will not put food on the table or heat their homes or gas in their cars? It was not – well, Di Maio was complaining about Draghi supporting peace with the Russians. That's the key. to understanding what's going on here. You know, because I know you and I've talked about this. I firmly believe that the commercial banking interests and the Fed are at war with Davos over the control of the financial future of the world. Davos wants to destroy the commercial banking system, move us on the central bank digital currencies, roll all the wealth up first to the ECB and then to the IMF, and then turn the UN into global government. That's their ultimate goal. I don't see that the Federal Reserve and the major New York, terribly corrupt New York banks are going to go along with this. We're talking about the most powerful single political lobby in the world, New York commercial banks, are not down with this. And I could spend half an hour explaining as to why I believe this. And I've talked about this in multiple forums on multiple interviews. Mm-hmm. So This is my thesis. You can disagree with me if you want, but I've done hours of interviews trying to explain this and written thousands of words on this. And I've been on this for over a year. So let's just take as given that I'm correct. Not saying that I am, but let's take it as given that I'm correct. If I am correct, then Conte going into Parliament and destroying Draghi's government before Draghi can go for the vote for the EU's version of Build Back Better, which would have distributed money from the European Commission directly and would have effectively negated the upcoming Italian elections in 2023, where even if a populist center-right government had come to power, they would have been hogtied to the EU because of the disbursement of these funds, because of the way that those funds would have come out. Okay, because those funds were coming directly from the EU Commission. They were no longer, this was the next step towards fiscal integration and political integration of the EU. And that was Draghi's job. That's what he was put in power to do, and he hasn't been able to do it. So Conte turns around and forces a dissolution of the government before that bill can pass. At the last moment, when everybody finds out that they've been lying through their teeth about how much gas that's been coming in from Russia and other sources, how much gas has been coming in from North Africa and other places to store in Italy's storage system for this winter. These numbers were not making any sense. The Germans were reporting that they were 65% full, but as of the middle of June, they were only 37% full. And then after it became mm-hmm. clear to somebody that was the mm-hmm. case, all of a sudden gas started pouring into the Italian gas storage system. So I think somebody finally alerted the populist, the people who are still relatively Italian patriots, finally saw how badly the EU was going to liquidate the entirety of Italy by starving them and freezing them this fall and winter so that Italy runs out of gas.
Oh, no mercy.
To heat their homes in December, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And says,
Merry Christmas. Uh-huh.
Wait, yeah. It gets worse than that. So, but even then, Conte and Lega and Forza Italia, who have been nothing but weak in the face of this Davos takeover for the last 3.5 years, all of a sudden are all willing to stand up and walk out of Parliament and deny Draghi even the potential for a confidence vote by removing the quorum. They don't stand up and are that strong after having been this weak if somebody more powerful than Draghi and Davos told them it was okay for them to do so. It was time for them to do so. Mm-hmm. And who in this world is on par power-wise with these people? Well, in my mind, the Federal Reserve, the New York banks, the American oligarchy. And so this is what I'm seeing. And it's no different than watching Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin last year stand up by themselves and have boundless reserves of strength to stand up to all the political pressure to not pass Build Back Better or the infrastructure bill or anything else. They don't do that without a guarantee of their family safety. Or of a guarantee of their family safety. They can stand up and say, that's enough, and Pelosi, Schumer, y'all can go scratch. So someone powerful told them to do that and that they would be okay, and they're still alive. And
very, very good point. Very important point, and absolutely correct. You are right. People don't understand. What they see in the media, the alleged media, is little to do with reality. You've got to look at that way behind and up to see who's pulling these strings. You're right. That's a good call. I didn't think about that either.
Yeah, it was as it was happening last year. I was writing about it, and I was saying because the minute the Fed started stealth tightening last summer, alarm bells went off in my head that there was something wrong, that there something was changing. Something had the this was this, that did not compute. And then all of a sudden, and then why was Pelosi trying to tie the debt ceiling to Build Back Better and the infrastructure bill into one vote, which was the dumbest thing imaginable? She had the votes to do all three independently, but she wouldn't do it because she actually didn't have the votes to get them all done. That was the problem. So she had the blackmail. So she was trying to blackmail everybody into using tying the debt ceiling to the passage of those bills, hoping that that would create enough political pressure to get Manchin and Sinema to cave. But it didn't work. And eventually she folded. Then they went after Powell and the Fed with this insider trading scandal to try and get rid of. And notice who they got. They got all the hawks. Mm-hmm. They didn't get any of the dubs. They only got Kaplan, Rosengren, and Carita. Those are the three biggest hawks on the Federal Reserve Board. And they went after Powell, but they missed. Okay.
Good call. There you go.
And then eventually, you know, Biden had to sue for peace and say he was going to reappoint Powell after meeting with him and Lael Brainard. And why? Because they couldn't. Danielle DiMartino Booth talked about this a lot. She said there's no way they were trying to force feed everybody Lael Brainard as the Fed chairman. And like she never had more than 35 votes in the Senate. She was mm-hmm. never going to get confirmed. So it was an easy thing for Powell to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, Biden and Obama gave up. Davos gave up and said, okay, they held their nose. Eventually, the FOMC voted when Powell's official term ended. They internally then were able to vote him chairman pro tem until, you know, he was, you know, reconfirmed. Right. Yeah. And then that was that. They lost all those political battles. And those political battles those things don't happen that way if there's not a powerful group of people who have said, you know what? Enough's enough. You guys are traitors and commies, and we're not taking this anymore. We're not doing this. And I'm tired of listening to people say to me, Joe Biden works for he's Beijing Biden. No, he's not. He works for Brussels. Just like Obama does.
Now, sure he does.
Is he compromised by the Chinese? Sure. But that's petty. And are the Chinese in there helping everything along to go their way? Absolutely. But who's the driver of this? Who put him in power? It was Brussels that put him in power. It was George Soros that put him in power.
And Schwab stirring up the soup, too.
You understand what I mean. But Soros hates the Chinese. Like, it doesn't scan that, you know, Soros.
They're not going to miss him when he's gone.
Right.
No.
So
that's a very good analysis. That's the best I've ever heard.
I mean, it's just been laying out this way. And so now we have the Italian government has fallen. So mm-hmm. now we've got the Italians going to new elections. And now the EU is in serious trouble. And now we're going to have a sovereign debt crisis in Europe. That's the catalyst for the sovereign debt crisis in Europe to truly start start accelerating here into the next year. The Fed is going to continue tightening until they break Europe and the euro dollar offshore euro dollar system. That's how Davos pays for all of this. And once the euro dollar shadow banking system is destroyed, mm-hmm. then the Fed can start to. And then we can start to normalize, you know, take the pressure off, you know, we'll be past the midterms, yada, yada, yada. I think that's the way it's going to lay out. Between now and then, there could be a whole bunch of assassinations and all of this, like, you know, gets, you know, what's Davos's next play here? I don't know, other than they start killing people. And they just killed Shinzo Abe. So, you know, now what? Jeff, it's just coming in so fast and thick at this point. Like on most days, I can't even process
it. It really is amazing how many people they kill. It's amazing to me. They kill people all the time. It's one way or the other. They'll kill them. You get in the way, you're gone. It's simple. They have no regard for that. They're not going to be held accountable by anybody. It's like all these people going to, I'm going to go to court. I'm going to go. Good luck. Have a fun time.
Well, you'll never go for discovery. So the interesting part about this. No, of course not. So the interesting part about this one is going to be, are they setting up Joe Biden having the 25th Amendment, Joe Biden health decline thing?
Because that may be the most interesting immediate screenplay we're going to be able to watch. Yes, he supposedly has COVID now. He's been taken off his heart meds to avoid a bad interaction with the COVID treatment. He's eating Paxlovid, and they're claiming it's not helping him. Look, he's beyond help. And I don't know what you think about these latex. They're really amazing, those latex masks. There may be a double or two here. Not for close-up work necessarily, but this thing is such a fraud. Whatever.
Okay, here's the good one. So remember, I just said they never like to go for discovery, right? So if there's a lawsuit.
Oh no, that's off. Right, off limits.
So now let's look at this. So who got a hold of Hunter Biden's iCloud account? Do you really think it was a bunch of autistes on 4chan? or do you think it was white hats within the United States oligarchy who are like, okay, that's enough, and we're going to go for. So the Republicans are going to win Congress in the fall. It may be the most consequential political wipeout since Maggie Thatcher took office.
It's going to be big. I agree.
It's going to be enormous. They already know that they're setting up Biden for an impeachment and conviction over selling our strategic petroleum reserve at $5 a gallon gasoline to the Chinese.
Talk about treason.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So now, who takes the last 2 years of Biden's term? Who do they give it? Don't laugh. Are they going to try and even float Hillary to give her a reward finally? Some people think they owe her.
Michelle
Obama may run in 2024. I don't know. There's a lot of talk about that, too.
I agree.
Not that it matters. It doesn't matter because you've made the point quite clear. And I've said it forever and ever. They are just window dressing. That's all they are.
But here's the interesting part about this, right? What if they're trying to get rid of Biden now before the midterms because they have to? Because if the Republicans take over and Biden is still president and they impeach him, that's effectively the equivalent of going for discovery during a lawsuit. So they have to get rid of him before the new Congress is set.
I stand with you on that. I think that's very smart and very astute. And I think I think all of you need to keep that in mind. Biden's got to go before the midterms.
Now the big question is whether or not they take Kamala Harris with him. And they're setting up either Janet Yellen, who's been doing all the state funerals and everything, or Gavin Newsom.
Oh, well, Newsom just went to the White House, was it last week, and said he's absolutely not running in 24. But these
because he's going to be appointed VP after they force Harris to resign for being an idiot, and then Biden resigns. Remember, Harris is going to get Spiro Agnew'd. Okay.
Yeah, Spiro.
I've been saying this for a year and a half now. Now, I've always thought it was going to be Janet Yellen, but, because Davos likes to put ex-central bankers in charge of governments, Mario Draghi. But I can see at this point, if not Yellen, then Newsom. And that's why Newsom was in the White House last, and it's why this is what's going on. Newsom is obviously their boy. Because he's the one that they trust the most because he's either got the most dirt on him or he's the biggest ideologue and the biggest true believer. Kamala Harris is not a true believer. She was put on the ticket purely for optics purposes.
Right. Newsom's aunt is Auntie Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you got to remember that it's all connected. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So this is what I can see them trying to pull. But I don't think
none of that is.
Awful. But I don't think any of this matters. Because if Davos gets destroyed by the Fed on the one side and the Russians forcing Europe into debtor's prison to pay for gas. Because as Putin pointed out the other day, you know, a year and a half ago, gas was $100 or 100 euros for 1,000 cubic feet or cubic meters. Today it's 1,700. That is not our doing. But that's what Europe wanted. So, okay, we gave them what they wanted. They did this to themselves. We didn't do it to them. 1,700% inflation in energy in Europe, but the official headline rate is 6.8%.
1,700. Okay.
Europe.
No, they can't sustain. They're not going to make it through the winter. No. Something's got to happen.
The Germans have been stealing all the gas coming into into Europe and sticking it in their storage facilities, and they were planning on starving everybody else. That was the goal. That was the plan.
The United EU. Funny.
Yep. No, it's always been the Fourth Reich, Jeff. Come on.
Sorry. God. This is really nuts, Tom. It's such a freak show. And I
No, Jeff, the funny part about it is that what I've just described is only 25% of it.
I don't know if I want to.
And I don't even know all the stuff that I just described, which is, you know, we're coming up on like the limits of my understanding of all this.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the rabbit hole is five times deeper than that and five times more complicated.
Do you see any fragment at the very top level of the matrix? Is it broken? Is it cracked? And how viable is the how is it split? 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, 50-50? What do you? And that's simplification, of course. Forgive that.
Yeah.
But.
Again, I think the best way to look at it is the West, when everybody was winning in the West, when the money was flowing and everybody was making money and everybody
good
was
times.
Taking for governments.
Yeah,
and we had good times and we could destabilize governments and put our guys in power and then we could make all this stuff work. And it was always winning. It was like like I always say, nothing cures problems in the hockey locker room than winning. Right. So it's an old saying in hockey, nothing cures problems in the room like winning. But what happens when you start losing? These people have never lost anything. But they've been on a losing streak now since 2014.
Big.
That has now become existential in many ways.
And do we tie that to the color revolution?
We tie it to we tie it to the British Parliament going against David Cameron when he asked for authorization to join Obama to invade Syria after the chemical weapons attack in Ghouta in late 2013, and the Tory parliament said no. It was right after that Obama Putin was able to come in, broker a deal with Obama to stave off the invasion. Assad, quote-unquote, gave up his chemical weapons, which he didn't have, and because the Brits were the one that, you know, that staged the chemical weapons attack because it was a false flag.
Right.
But, you know, Putin did that. And then Putin's reward for saving Obama's bacon and allowing Obama to save face was for Obama and company to then foment a coup in Ukraine 4 months later on the, at the last day of the Olympics.
Okay, I see the link now.
Okay, so now from that point forward, so that was the first loss. Losing Crimea was the second loss. Putin coming in Syria in 2015 and you know, basically proving to everybody that that Obama had been backing ISIS in Syria for a year and a half, for the last 3 years, and then they failed to get Erdogan in the coup, thanks to Putin and the Iranians. There's a series of small failures, but they keep racking up over time. When they put the ruble crisis in 2014, the Russians survived it. And, you know, the Saudis went on a I could do this again for another hour. But the series of losses here eventually gets to the point, you know, we wind up with Trump and then we wind up with Brexit, or, you know, the other way around, we wind up with Brexit and then Trump and then blah, blah, blah. And then all of these things pile up and all of a sudden you're starting to look and you go, okay, they're pulling their agenda forward. And from 2050 to 2030. Now all of a sudden they're going to unleash the the virus on us in 2020 in order to get rid of Trump, in order to accelerate the timeline. And in my mind, I start going back over the history of the Federal Reserve of the last 5 years since Trump, went into took power, and they were able to get Powell installed as private equity Powell installed as the Fed chairman, no longer a Davos, cultured oligarch globalist like Yellen and Bernanke. We had a shift in philosophy at the head of the Federal Reserve. And the American banks started decoupling completely from Europe starting in 2018 and into 2019. Like, there was no repo. They wouldn't take European debt as a collateral for repo contracts anymore. That's what caused, in many ways, what caused the repo crisis of 2019. American banks have been slowly but surely exiting all ties, shadow banking ties to Europe, so that when Europe implodes this time, it's not going to blow back on the American banks. We'll have problems here. Don't get me wrong. It's not like we're going to get, go away scot-free when we pop, when the Fed has to engineer a bad recession. But this is a recession we need, okay? Because it's all about malinvestment and, the cleansing of the malinvestment.
Yeah.
But we're talking now about the Fed truly turning tables on these people. And
all right, well, this is going to be very, very interesting, to put it mildly. You saw that yesterday, Schwab and UN Sec General Guterres signed an agreement to accelerate Agenda 2030. They want to push it forward.
Yes,
I don't know how much, but there's so many currents here. And these are big currents. They're not just little eddies. A lot of big power moving around. Tom, thank you. That was extraordinary. What a one-man show that was. Great. Great job.
Thank you.
Appreciate it,
Jeff.
All right, you be well.
You too.
Take care.
Take care.
All right, thank you. Tom Luongo, and you don't get it any better than that, friends, not in 1 hour. We'll be right back. Hang on.